All right. Well, welcome to those of you joining us today. This is our November webinar offered by the IPART research team. This webinar is titled Increasing Job Retention Through the PRIME Project. PRIME being Promoting Retention in Meaningful Employment. This webinar is being recorded. We have an ASL English interpreter. This webinar is pre-approved for CRC credit. You will get an email after the webinar with the link to get your CRC credit. We will also drop a link in the chat for the evaluation near the end of the webinar. If you have any technical issues, please put those in the chat. This is going to be an engaging webinar, hopefully about 45 minutes of presentation and then some time for Q&A. So if you have any questions related to what you're hearing, feel free to drop that into the Q&A section while we're presenting. And with that, I will kick it over to our presenters. Thank you very much for joining us.
Excellent. Thank you, Stacey, and thank you, Stacey, for that great introduction. Good morning, good afternoon, depending where you're joining us from. We're very excited for you to be here today to hear more about our fantastic project that we're working on. Stacey was nice enough to be able to read the entire name of the project for you all. We like to just refer to it as the PRIME Project. So throughout this presentation, when you hear PRIME, it's that Promoting Retention and Meaningful Employment. So this is part of the Disability Innovation Fund projects, and we'll get to the disclaimer side here in a minute, but this is under those DIF-Fs. So we are very excited to kind of go through a little bit about what we've been doing with this project, where we're at now and what kind of the future holds for the project. But before we do that, let's just do a quick round of introductions today. So I am so excited to introduce myself and my lovely colleagues. So I am Emily Brink, and I am here with my two fantastic colleagues who are going to introduce themselves as well. Tim Tansey, the PI of the project, and also Kate Anderson. And we're all part of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, or Wisconsin Systems in Madison, a part of the IPART research team. Our team has had a wide variety of experiences with grant writing over the years and working on grants. So we're always excited when we get an opportunity to be able to talk to you about some projects. You may see us as well with some of our collaborative folks, which I'll show on the next slide, on a wide variety of other projects as well. But I'll give a second and pass it off to Dr. Tim Tansey, the PI of the project, to introduce himself.
Well, hello everyone. Tim Tansey, again, as Emily mentioned, University of Wisconsin-Madison, and really excited to be able to talk with all of you today about this important aspect of vocational rehabilitation, and that specifically is supporting individuals to maintain or keep those jobs that they worked so hard to attain. So thank you, and again, looking forward to talking about this topic today. Kate?
Great. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Emily. Hi, everyone. Greetings. I'm Kate Anderson, also with the IPART team through the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It's a pleasure to be here with you today and share the latest and greatest on the PRIME project. As Emily had mentioned, our team has been involved in this type of systems change work and innovation work for well over 20 years. And so it's a pleasure to be able to be here with you today and to share an overview of this project and where we're at. Emily, with that, I will turn the mic back to you.
Fantastic. Thank you, both of you, for introducing yourselves. And of course, a good project isn't without a good team. And so we wanted to just provide some recognition for our project partners who are supporting us in this project. So kind of the University of Wisconsin-Madison is the project lead. So once again, Tim and Kate kind of alluded at this. We've been working over the last couple decades of program development. We've done things like evaluation. We've looked at engagement. And we really have taken all of that and working with individuals who have disabilities to find employment. And we really have taken all of that and incorporate everything from the expertise of our project partners and other project partners that are not on this particular grant but had an opportunity to work in the past to come up with this prime project we're going to talk about today. Some of our other colleagues as well, want to give a shout out to is the University of Maryland, NASA, Yolby, Florida Atlantic University, CSAVR, OPSI, Autism Workforce, and Employment Resources, Inc., or ERI. So these are just some of the subawards and individuals also helping with the Prime Project today. Everything from our fantastic website that we're going to be showing you later in today's presentation to some of our cool AI features and just implementation and program evaluation pieces. So I would be remiss if I didn't say, or our team didn't say, thank you for our project partners for all of their hard work that they have put in and will continue to put in for this particular project. Before we get too far in the presentation, just always want to make sure that we do give the disclaimer and the funding attributions for this. So this content of this presentation was developed under a grant under the U.S. Department of Education, but the department does not mandate or prescribe practices, models, or other activities described or discussed in this document. So the contents may contain examples, adaptations of, and links to resources created and maintained by another public or private organization. So the department does not control or guarantee the accuracy, relevance, timeliness, or completeness of this outside information. So the content does not necessarily represent the department or the policy of the department and is not intended to represent the views or policies or be endorsed of any views expressed or materials provided by any federal agencies. Whew, long-winded, got through it, but just wanted to make sure that we did express that before we started today. Now that we've gone through some of the logistical pieces as well, let's go ahead and start about retention, why it matters, also thinking a little bit about WIOA and retention. So WIOA is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act, and it requires that vocational rehabilitation agencies report on common performance measures. So as we are aware, there are 78 agencies and territories across our state and territories that have to report on retention. So when we think about retention, definitely in the vocational rehabilitation setting, we think of not only are individuals with disabilities being exiting in employment and in competitive employment, but what are they doing long term? What are they doing 2 quarters after exit or 4 quarters after exit? And 2 quarters after exit is really that 6 months after they have been employed or after they have left vocational rehabilitation employed. And then 4 quarters would be 12 months, post, leaving VR systems, exit employment. So those are really the two, key stakeholder or the two key areas that we look at when we look at retention, because this is what we report on to the Rehabilitation Service Administration, and we're able to track this kind of the long term. So what we look at specifically within that most of the time is usually median earnings. So what are people making at Q2 and Q4? Have they had an opportunity to get a raise? Are they still working? Are they working at their same job or maybe at a different job? So we can track that information as well. Other common performance measures when we think about retention and what impacts retention is credential attainment. So did somebody receive or earn some kind of credential along the way? And this could have been throughout their time at VR, but we also wanted to see, like, if people have specific credentials or if they receive specific services, does that actually impact the long-term employment rate for an individual that goes to the VR systems? Other common performance measures we tend to look at are through WIOA and the mandate are measurable skills gain. And then the last one is that effectiveness in serving employers. So on this list shown on the slide, there are four that are bolded and are independent on individuals who exited in competitive integrated employment after receiving services under an individualized plan for employment, so under an IPE. So once again, the four that are bolded on the screen are those employment rates at 6 and 12 months, or second and fourth quarter, and then looking at median earnings at 6 months or second quarter, and then the effectiveness in serving employers. So those are kind of the ones that we're going to focus on a little bit more today in that sense. So I wanted to pass it on next to, once again, the PI, the project of why retention matters and how him and our team came up with this great opportunity through this grant opportunity. So, Tim.
All right. Thank you, Emily. And again, so again, we do a lot of work with a range of different state agencies, state probation rehabilitation agencies. And I think in, across all that work, as Emily and Kate have mentioned over a long period of time, you know, we're seeing increasingly this piece around, you know, we're developing the skills to engage individuals. We're developing the skills to serve individuals and see them exit in employment. But then the reality is when they started looking at those performance measures and recognizing that a lot of the measures, as Emily pointed out, focus on people keeping their jobs, keeping it for 6 months, you know, showing that those changes in earnings, keeping it for 12 months. Effectiveness in serving employers is really measured by are individuals still working for the same employer at 12 months that they were at 6 months. And so when we think about those performance measures, it truly does weight the outcomes towards not just did someone get a job, which is critical, but did they actually keep that job for an extended period of time? And we really look at this as far as, you know, retention matters in so many ways. It isn't just thinking about we can, you know, be able to talk about it. We can kind of point to federal data and kind of, you know, show those outcomes. But when we think about retention is really what the program, the long-term intent was always about. It was getting people engaged in the community, getting people participating in work, but recognizing the long-term benefits associated with work. And so we think about those long-term benefits, people being able to be successful and maintain, let's say, their own residence, to be able to purchase enough, you know, food to eat, to do all the other things that we need to do in a regular in society. Job placement was really important for that, but job placement doesn't necessarily equal long-term stability. Job placement gives the opportunity for that, but we really need to think about how that maintenance of work, keeping that job for 6 months, 12 months, years, that's what promotes economic independence. That's what promotes social inclusion. Those are the key pieces when we think about people being successful, people having the opportunity for self-direction, for autonomy. It comes down to, you know, do they have those resources to be able to do that? And those resources come about very clearly from the ability to keep that job and grow in that job over time. In terms of, you know, we think about retention, it's, you know, we know that if you keep a job for a long time, your lifetime earnings go up, regardless of kind of other kind of supports that are out there. People who are able to keep working and maintain that experience in the world of work have higher overall lifetime earnings. When we think about in the other kind of benefit to it, and I think why many of us got into this field as a whole, it really comes down to we take pride in the fact that we have a job. We take pride, and it really affects our self-esteem and self-worth if we're actually able to work that job and maintain it over the long term. So, again, we think of there's these extrinsic benefits, such as, hey, we have more money, which is really important, but it's how individuals feel about themselves and how, again, overall, again, we start thinking about kind of those larger pieces of it isn't just how the person feels about themselves, it's what are the benefits to the business. Well, the business, you know, they – by having people who keep jobs longer, reduces their turnover. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. It generally leads to increased productivity, and in that if we're not having to retrain people and people kind of get better, they're developing those skills, and that, you know, they're going to do a job in theory better a year into it than they are in the first month, that increases the overall productivity. It's a benefit to the employer. And then ultimately, we think about society, and we can think about public benefits and people being, you know, being a part of that. We can think about the impact overall on the economy by having more income earners in the overall population. But then we also think about if we're seeing individuals with disabilities retain their jobs over the long term, that's what can ultimately promote that social change. You know, very clearly from the research that more contact and greater contact increases acceptance of persons with disabilities and decreases things like stigma. But if we're not giving that opportunity for those relationships to develop so that people can identify and recognize that people with disabilities are an important part of our society, an important part of our labor market, an important part of our culture, if we're not getting them to staying in work long enough, we lose out on that. We always think about, you know, it's important for VR programs. I mean, you know, increasingly there's the pressure, again, in part because of the WIOA. You know, how many people get a job is a really important factor. And then thinking about, well, if we spend $1 million on vocational rehabilitation, what is the impact on society for that? What is the impact in terms of, you know, what is the value added? And that's a certain proposition that certainly is discussed at a federal level. It's certainly discussed at a state level when appropriators are trying to identify, do we fund this program and why do we fund it and what is the benefit to our state, to our nation? Those ROIs are incredibly important, and there's actually going to be a great article coming out in a couple of months in one of the journals that really talks about this ROI and hasn't been done for a while, but you think of for every dollar spent, it ranges from, yeah, there's $2.50 to $3 return up to $10 in return, depending on certain factors. So it's really important from that standpoint. And in terms of business, we can go to the next slide, Emily, because I think I talk a little bit more about this there. When we think about a business trying to replace that employee, it's expensive. It costs them a lot more than what their annual salary is because of that productivity piece. It costs more in terms of overall morale. If people are leaving a business in droves because it's just not a good experience, whether the person's with or without disabilities, it affects the overall morale of the company. It certainly affects our clients and the people that they're serving as a function of this, so their employees, their customers. But then, you know, again, the big impact, I think, on businesses is that institutional knowledge, the things that you learn being on the job and how the job operates and how to do it and do it more efficiently, losing that capacity over time really creates some problems. And this is what affects that return on investment. We know that businesses that are able to retain their workers generally do better. They're more productive. Do better financially. They're able to grow. There's just a host of different benefits, but it all links back to, do we have a stable labor group that's in that business being successful and doing the work? And the more that there's turnover, that's usually a sign that there's some problems in that business, and it's going to be very difficult for them to continue to compete, particularly in this global environment. So why do individuals with, you know, employees with disabilities leave? What are the things as far as, you know, their voluntary turnover? So, and certainly if, you know, we can always say, well, if someone doesn't know the job or someone doesn't have a skill set or hasn't been trained properly, that comes through very quickly. That's, we could talk about involuntary, where the employer lets somebody go. But then why is the individual with a disability? So we've gone through the whole process in VR. We've found kind of the right career area. They've got the right supports in place. They've received job coaching if needed. They're on there, you know, working. Well, why do they leave? And I think the general piece you'll find is, first of all, it's the work environment. You know, we're not talking about how to connect with our coworkers about our disability. How do we actually talk about it? You know, to what extent are people aware of what a disability is and isn't? And are we actually addressing some of those stereotypes or stigma that's going to naturally happen in those workplaces? To what extent is there good leadership? And more often than not, there's not. When you start seeing why people are leaving, it's the supervisor or the manager or the HR of the company doesn't really set a tone as far as, you know, thinking about, you know, what this means in terms of hiring individuals and how to make sure that we are treating individuals with disabilities with respect and really thinking about what are the accommodations that are going to help them be successful. You know, it's one of the few groups that if we saw high turnover rates of any gender or any racial or diverse group, at the levels that we see persons with disabilities, there would be national outrage. And we just don't tend to see that, but it is a significant problem in that, you know, that turnover happens so often for individuals with disabilities, and I'll touch on some data that shows that. The other things that come into place, limited career advancement. So as Emily mentioned, hey, we kind of look at what's your pay and is it increasing over time. People generally don't want to be in a job that has no opportunity for advancement, and mostly because advancement could mean more pay, could be more responsibility, could be more, you know, more hours or new tasks. But if we're kind of putting people, or they're finding that they're in jobs that they can't really move out of, you know, that's, you know, kind of looking long term. It doesn't fulfill that idea of career development, career progression. And I think lastly, it's very easy, you know, for individuals to report that, you know, they've had a bad experience with a manager, and a manager that hasn't really thought through how to interact effectively or talk about disability. And so that certainly causes that some of those difficulties as well. So I want to talk about some outcomes, if we could, on the next slide. And 78 agencies, they serve about a million individuals, a little bit more than a million on an annual basis. The federal 2024 budget was about $4 billion. Again, these are just quick notes to get through because I take too long on some slides and I got to speed up. And we started looking at retention data and, you know, really wanted to kind of get an idea of what was happening with some of these different groups. And we find that at 6 months, it varies a little bit across different groups, but generally about two-thirds are retaining their work. At 12 months post-exit, we start seeing a pretty significant drop-off in terms of what's happening with individuals, and I'll show that in a second. And, you know, when we think about, for example, specific populations, psychiatric, typically as a group, about 68% at 6 months, so they're doing well 6 months out. There's that, you know, kind of gotten to that point, they're stable, they've exited VR services, and they're still working there for about 6 months, again, the majority, which is great. But then we see a drop to about 19.5 to 20% at 12 months. So think about that. It's, you know, you always see those scenarios of, you know, 3 out of 5 are going to have a job after 6 months. 1 out of 5, and you think about that, 1 out of 5 individuals with psychiatric disabilities are still employed 12 months later. It makes you question, you know, what is the aim of the program, and what can we do differently to support that? And so to give you some examples of kind of other groups that we see in this, on the next slide, we have a quick table for you, and I'm sorry, I always kind of squeeze more onto these slides than I should try. I think everything made it on, but, you know, if you look at the numbers, so in, you know, the period data we looked at, there were 45,000 individuals with specific learning disabilities that exited in employment. When you actually looked at 6 months later, about 68% were still employed, which is great. But then again, drops to about 20% at 12 months. And, you know, kind of a range of different things on this slide, but it's the idea of the patterns is fairly prolific. You know, individuals get out, they feel connected. They probably have kind of a set group of coworkers, set group of managers. They're doing well for 6 months, but a lot happens in the world of work from 6 to 12 months. Again, at that point, a manager might move up and out. Different coworkers have come in. They might have, you know, done some things where the person's getting additional responsibilities or the job has changed in some area. And so we see this precipitous drop off, you know, uniformly across individuals with disabilities that, you know, at 6 months, we've lost some, but at 12 months, we've really run into some problems. And we start thinking about how does this relate to those WIA measures in terms of, you know, 6 months we're doing okay. Earnings wise, we're probably doing okay as well. But at 12 months, being able to only say that about 1 in 5 are still working, that's really not where I think the intent under WIA, the intent of Congress is as far as this program being that successful piece. We don't have an opportunity to stabilize. We don't have an opportunity to kind of enter into the middle class if we're not keeping jobs over the long term. And the data clearly shows that we're not very successful over the long term with individuals. And some people are really visual. I tend to flip back and forth depending on what I'm looking at. So on the next slide, if you think about this as a survival curve where everybody at exit, 100% of people are employed, and this is all those groups, but you see that they all kind of follow, there's a little kind of variance in there at not something I'd worry about kind of saying one group is doing better than the other, because they're all doing poorly. You know, at 6 months, we'd certainly love to see more individuals keeping their jobs at 6 months. But then when we think about what that drop off has been, you know, going into 12 months, that's, you know, the thing that we really started looking at is how do we provide supports? How do we recognize what people are needing? And how do we get to the point of helping people not just keep their jobs and get a job, which is what I think vocational rehabilitation agencies do an excellent job of. And then even kind of that beneficial effect of that stability that they saw at exit, where most of that's kind of carrying through at 6 months. How do we kind of change this curve so that instead of having kind of this general downward piece, I'm going to draw a line here on the screen for everyone. But if we kind of saw that there wasn't some significant drop off happening, we would actually have a curve that looks, you know, kind of a line that looks like this. If there's a direct proportion of time to job loss. The reality is, and for those that, you know, I'm looking here, I drew one line that just kind of maintains that same line as before without the bend at 6 months. But we look at this as the gap. This is the gap that we have to think about, how do we shrink this gap? And we may not be able to, you know, do it entirely through effective intervention, but this is your opportunity here where we see things like this. This is certainly one opportunity to address it. The other is to look at the overall slope. And instead of seeing that drop off here, even to 60%, if we can move that drop off to, let's say, instead of 67%, what would it look like in terms of 80? And then what would it look like over here when we get over to this end? Does it continue to kind of maintain that? And how do we kind of avoid this steep drop off that we've seen? So I'm going to clear those out. We can go to the next slide. Very cognizant of time, so I'm going to make sure. So what helps with retention? Well, there's a lot of things that kind of come in and support retention. Things like support employment. Support employment, the provision of support employment, generally leads not only to individuals keeping a job while they're in services, but it actually supports post-exit. Now, it doesn't mean everyone go out and provide post-employment service or support employment services, because there's specific persons that benefit from that service and that really meet the need for support employment, especially those with most significant disabilities. But things like short-term job support, does the person have a job coach? And job coaches that was where I got my career start. I'll always talk about, you know, long ago when I, you know, somebody mentioned earlier when I still had brown hair instead of gray, I was a job coach. And job coaching was as much about helping the person learn the job as it was working with individuals on how to interact with their coworkers, working with individuals in terms of how to work and interact with their supervisor, and advocate for things that they needed in the job. It wasn't just about, can you do this job well? And well being, you know, what the at that level of employer's expectation, but what else can we do to kind of support that? You know, rehabilitation technology certainly comes into play as far as kind of helping individuals find the accommodations and support those accommodations. Job placement really comes down to, rather than individuals kind of finding jobs that they can get, which is wonderful, but finding jobs that align to their interests, their values, and their skills and abilities. That's where job placement assistance comes really into benefit. And so there are a range of different benefits that come in that support that. There are also things we identified that actually affected retention. Things like, for individuals that do have long-term unemployment experiences, that actually decreases the likelihood that they're going to maintain their jobs over time. And again, it's the idea of what soft skills are lost as a function of long-term unemployment that might need to have some additional development or rebuilding for the person to be successful. You know, receiving SSI and SSDI again serves as a barrier. And I think it's, again, that always comes back to individuals being nervous about losing those benefits, worrying about changes in those benefits. And so there's that cautionary note, even with the wonderful work incentive benefits that are available, it's going past that psychological hold of the risk of losing benefits and what impact that has. And then certainly individuals who have had previous interactions with the criminal legal system, they, again, certainly experience a multiplying effect of stigma. It's not just disability, but it's disability and criminal background. Yeah, Kate.
Sorry to interrupt you. We just have a question in the Q&A that I thought was relevant now. Folks were just asking if you could please clarify what the numbers in the parentheses are on this slide.
Sure. So these numbers, this is in terms of when we look at the data, we do logistic regression. It's a type of analysis. And so the idea is if someone receives supported employment, OR, sorry, stands for odds ratio. And that odds ratio basically is, think about a multiplier effect that individuals who have 2.47, sorry, there's a comma, it should be 2.47. Individuals with 2.47 were 2.47 times as likely to keep that job than individuals who didn't receive support employment. Individuals who had short-term job supports, that odds ratio at 2.25 means that they're a little bit more than twice as likely to still be working over 6 and 12 months than without it. So odds ratios, if it's above one, it means that there's a greater chance that this is helping things. As it drops below one, it means that it's affecting it. It's less likely to happen. And so, you know, we always want to see odds ratios over one in terms of those tell us, hey, this is helping something. And when we see it less than one, we know it's hurting that outcome. And so we think about long-term unemployment. You know, we can't, you know, people come in with that. So we think about these barriers, the barriers always come back to when you see kind of items below one, it doesn't mean that we don't serve those individuals. It doesn't mean that we provide, you know, range of services. It just means that maybe we need to talk with that individual in long-term unemployment about work skills. And maybe we talk with that person that's going to be providing short-term job supports of, hey, there's some social skills that might need to be developed or soft skills for that person to be successful. If they're receiving SSDI or SSI, did they receive benefits counseling? Or, I'm sorry, work incentive benefits counseling? If they haven't, that negative is definitely going to be there. If they have, did we actually not only explain those benefits, but did we come back at some point when the person was working and make sure they understood how things would change? So, for example, if they're receiving SSI and they're earning money and that SSI amount goes down because of the offsets, if they're not made aware of what's going to happen and actually been talked to as it's happening, that can actually cause someone to say, you know what, this isn't worth it. I didn't know I was going to lose half of my benefits because I started earning $600 or $700 a month. So you know, that's where those odd ratios kind of tell us of, you know, when we see a negative, it's how do we address the negative and what are the mechanisms to increase these things in positive? So utilizing and finding good providers of job placement assistance, short-term job support, support employment, those providers make a world of difference in terms of supporting these outcomes over the long term. But thanks, Kate. Great question. So I got two more slides that I'll talk about. So all the things we're talking about here, and so when I talk about this data, this process actually started a couple of years ago. We actually started looking at retention back in 2022, 2023, before we ever thought about trying to write for a project to actually address the issue. We wanted to know what the scope of the problem was and recognize this is a significant problem that needed to be addressed. And so this spring, we'll actually be publishing the results in an open access journal. I'll talk about future webinars at the end, but you know, once this is available, we'll make sure that everyone who registered for the webinar gets a notice that this special issue has been published. You can go in and take a look at you kind of the range of different factors, both in terms of, you know, what is our responsibility for retention? Why do we need to think about retention? What are the ethical issues kind of in play? But then, you know, what are those factors? Who's at risk for losing their jobs over time? What type of services actually help them avoid that risk? And what are the overall pieces that ultimately help people be successful? So this data will be coming out in a couple of months. And again, as it does, we'll make sure to make that available to you. But that gets us to my last slide, and I get to kick it over to my colleague, Dr. Anderson. Vocation rehabilitation. We think about it as we want, you know, we certainly want people to get jobs. That's kind of a key piece, but getting that job was part of what I think most of us got into. It wasn't, gosh, I'm really proud of myself because the person got a job. I'm really proud of myself because the person had a life-changing experience that helped them for the better. And it's not a life-changing experience if it's temporary in nature. You know, life-changing experience that doesn't last is an experience. not bad, but we really want to think about how do we help people over the long term, because it's that long-term success that creates all of these changes. And that's ultimately what we're looking for in terms of the Diff Prime project. And I'll kick it over to Dr. Anderson.
Fantastic. Thank you. And just a heads up, Tim and Emily, we have a number of excellent questions that are popping up in the Q&A. And so we'll make sure to save time to address those near the end. So Prime, this is our website, and we wanted to make sure to play this for you so you can see that it's the movement on the screen really is used to represent the interactive nature of Prime. We also have a QR code, so you're welcome to scan that as well, and that'll get you right into our site. We will be providing the link to the website here in just a couple of slides as well. Next slide, please. So Prime, and much of what I'm going to be sharing here are simply extracts from the website, but just to give you kind of the 50,000 foot overview here. So Prime is a 5-year project, again, focused on helping people with disabilities to not only obtain employment, but to stay employed and to build those meaningful, lasting careers, as Emily had noted, are emphasized in WIOA. And when we think of retention, Tim had mentioned this as well, and the research behind this is substantial, but we know that employment retention also provides more stability in individuals' lives. And that's critical when we're thinking of quality of life and as well as, you know, economic stability. Financial stability, that doesn't happen with a job. That happens over time by keeping jobs and advancing in careers. Next slide, please. So we have some prime components, some key components that are involved in this project. So first, it involves a personalized pre-employment training that individuals will have the opportunity to participate in that will help people plan for job success. Additionally, there's an AI, artificial intelligence, AI-powered support tool that is currently being developed that will be checking in, offering resources, and then alerting to staff behind the scenes when a participant might need some additional help or some additional supports. So being able to catch people kind of point in time rather than waiting too long before we can intervene and address issues. There's also a peer support portal for participants to be able to connect with others who are navigating similar journeys with employment retention, and navigating that process, as well as one-on-one support from retention specialists. So these are going to be the actual humans behind the scenes that will be receiving the alerts through the AI-powered support tool for up to a year after that job placement. So trying to leverage the benefits of technology and AI, which this new world that we're navigating, we all need to be AI adjacent, but doing that ethically and also connecting to humans to provide those additional supports behind the scenes. Next slide, please. So who is Prime designed for? And I suspect, Tim, we may get some additional questions on this throughout, but in a nutshell, we focus on people with disabilities who are in the final stages of their vocational rehabilitation plans, so nearing that job placement or employment procurement, also those that may be re-entering the workforce, individuals who have been involved with the justice system, as well as and or in addition to individuals representing low income and or upper underrepresented backgrounds. So throughout Prime, we also work very closely with VR staff, so VR personnel, to increase their competence and capacity to support long-term employment. And I believe, as Tim had mentioned too, that VR does an excellent job in terms of helping people obtain employment. And so now through Prime, the retention component is also helping to build that confidence and staff competence confidence and capacity for helping individuals to retain employment. So how is Prime different? So most employment programs have a target or a focus on getting people hired, which is true of VR for the most part as well. Although I believe, as Tim had also noted, when you look at the underpinnings of the Rehabilitation Act, employment retention, career development, et cetera, that's always been there. Over time, we've shape-shifted a little bit just based on priority, and a lot of that's influenced by external factors, environmentally and otherwise. But Prime certainly celebrates employment, because you can't have employment retention without employment. But Prime then focuses on what happens after the hire. So we're here for the long haul, again, using AI tools for real-time personalized support, those peer communities to help reduce isolation and build confidence among participants, as well as providing that ongoing mentorship from trained retention specialists. So again, Prime is not designed to replace VR. Prime is really designed to complement VR. Next slide, please. So our impact goals. Earlier on, I believe that we had mentioned, and Emily had mentioned, that some of the current data indicates that at 6 months post-exit, the retention rate, current data and some of the recent trends indicate that within VR, we're sitting at about a 60 to 65% retention rate, kind of best case scenario. We're aiming for 75% retention rate at 6 months. Current data at about 12 months post-exit, again, and it's, Tim had shared the data that were turned down in that area. So best case scenario, 50 to 50% retention rate. Again, we're aiming for 65% still employed at 12 months. So when Tim was illustrating that gap that we're trying to address on the graph itself, that's our sweet spot. We're trying to help shift that line and shift that trend. We also are aiming to have 55% of participants still employed with the same employer at 12 months. So not only retaining employment, but retaining employment with the same employers, which is another indicator of stability. And also, our goal is to enroll at least 500 participants across multiple states. Next slide, please. So we like to say that Prime is built on both evidence and heart. So certainly going back to what we know works, evidence-based practices, but then also grounded in sound theoretical frameworks, specifically those of us in social sciences are drawing from social cognitive career theory, which focuses on boosting competence, motivation and goal setting, stages of change, or the trans-theoretical model. So meeting people where they're at and supporting growth over time, as well as motivational interviewing. So, and many of you may be familiar with these. I know some of you have had specific training and also already embody motivational interviewing within your work, but having that extra tools in our toolkit to be able to help address and tackle ambivalence and help increase goal persistence. Next slide, please. Quick snapshot here of our five-year timeline. So we just wrapped up year one. We really focused on listening, gathering information and data, and beginning development of the prototype. Years one and two, so now we kind of shifted here. We're just at the early stages here in year two, but testing and refining the prototype in terms of what really works and what do people really need, what types of help do they need on the job. And then moving forward throughout year two, we'll be beginning to recruit the 500 employees with disabilities, as well as launching our pre-employment retention training. So we're referring to that as the PERT training curriculum. Also and that'll extend across year three. Again, year two, as folks are enrolling, we will begin the one-on-one support from the job retention specialists, as well as continuing to train or shall we say educate the AI tool as it continues to evolve. So that's a big piece of this as well. And that will continue this year, you know, through the end of year five. And then years three through five will really focus on the evaluation elements, as well as looking at expanding and replicating the model. Next slide, please. And here is the link to our website. Feel free to copy and paste that. We could also pop that into the chat for you if helpful. And encourage you just to take some time to explore the website if this is something of interest to you. And you're welcome to share it with others. Next slide. Okay, so now we can get into more of our Q&A. So let's see here. Oh, thanks, Stacy. Tim, why don't I just start with, I'll just go in the order that we received them. How about that?
Okay, sounds good.
So Tim, specifically earlier you had shared that there's updated research coming out on return on investment for employers on retention. Do you mind repeating where that will come from? Folks would love to look for that when it's available.
Yeah, that'll be coming out in the Rehabilitation Counselors and Educators Journal, and late spring would be, I think, the timeline we're looking at for that. But again, what's wonderful about that journal is it is an open access publication, so you'll be able to view and download the articles that are placed there. So look for it, but just be aware that if you get an email from us saying, you know, the special issue is published, we'll make sure to give access so that everyone that's interested in this work can locate those manuscripts.
Fantastic. Thank you. When you were mentioning reasons for job loss or lack of job retention, a comment came in also just asking about what about outside circumstances such as losing housing or mental health flare-ups in that individual's experience, that those tend to be huge factors as well.
Definitely huge factors. If there was any kind of, you know, single person-based factor, we would see that group maybe have differences. So, for example, the mental health group does a little bit worse than, let's say, individuals with learning disabilities at 12 months. This is big numbers. It comes out. It is significant, but it's not really meaningful. There's something else going, and I'm actually looking at a question that Beth Mendez posted in the Q&A, and I think Beth had, you know, it's a good segue to kind of, you know, pull into that, that they notice, Beth notices that customers that have been successfully closed, their case, they're independent, they're meeting expectations, and then months later they're returning back because they've lost their job. And that, you know, sometimes it's due to a drop in hours. They've just been outright let go. There's a new manager. Even when there's those accommodations on file, and that even though each case is unique, this is about, you know, again, this is one fifth of their customer base that they're seeing this with. And I think as we see that come through, there are a lot of factors to it, but it's, and again, I think it's, the farther we get away, I mean, about like ripples on a pond, we can kind of look at what happens right at exit. And as you get out a little bit ways, we can see where it's at 6 months. And at 12 months, there's just a lot more things going on, both in the workplace and life that happen. The reality is we don't really know, what are all those things. So being able to kind of come in with this project, not only we're trying to support it, but we'll actually have a way to track, you know what, it is those number of individuals that lost their housing. It is those individuals who had a flare-up in their disability and the conditions of their disability. I mean, just even having that information tells us we need to change how we do things because it gives us new information about what's happening over the long term. And so all those things kind of come into place and really kind of kick off in terms of that importance.
Great. Thanks, Tim. There was another question that came in earlier. When you were presenting the information on the various disability groups, stats around the various disability groups with employment retention, do you have any stats on individuals with blindness or low vision or visual impairments as well?
Yes. I only picked the most frequently occurring groups to kind of present today. But in the research that's coming out, there is individuals with a blindness and low vision that looks at their outcomes as well. Again, they'll vary a little bit at 6 and 12 months, but it's still, we're still seeing that significant drop off. And that's what we want to try to attend to, both increasing 6 months, but where the opportunity for a lot of gains is going to be at that 12-month point in time. So please, yeah, look for the special issue.
Okay, great. Tim, you had answered Dr. Tuyak directly in the Q&A. Do you want me to reiterate that so that others?
Yeah, please.
Tim? Okay, so, and Dr. Tuyak, feel free to chime in as well. You had noted that you would like to envision research opportunities for Alaska Natives, American Indians, in terms of supported employment and other ethical issues. For example, highlighting return on investments in Alaska through shareholder development and relations aligned through WIOA, Alaska Natives Claims Statement, Settlement Act, and VR. Thank you, Dr. Tim. And Tim, you had just noted great ideas. You agree that research on ROI, particularly as we extend out to long-term outcomes, specifically the 12-month post-exit, will really help show the importance and overall benefit of the program. Great. A few more
just
questions.
Just a note as well, if you answered any questions in the Q&A, everybody can see those as well.
Okay. Thank you
so
for mentioning that.
So keeping that in mind as we have many questions coming in.
Okay. Fantastic. Next question. Is from Doug Clark. Overall, are state VR agencies adjusting their service model based on the retention data to focus more on long-term success than the traditional 90-day milestone?
A great question, Doug, and I think this kind of pairs well with anonymous attendee's question a little bit farther down. I think they're trying. It's in part where the law both supports it and works against it at the same time. Once an individual has exited from services, there really aren't a lot of things that the VR agency can do to support individuals. They're not supposed to be spending money on those individuals. They're not supposed to be doing a lot of active work any longer with that group. And it becomes dependent on the individual coming back to VR and hopefully coming back before they lost their job. Now, the law does allow for expedited review and re-enrollment for individuals that are at risk for job loss, or even looking to upgrade jobs, or again, there's different things you can do there. But the problem is, even when we think about like post-employment services, you know, again, it's difficult to get those aligned and get those set up in time before that job loss happens. So I guess the short answer is yes, they're trying. I think the longer answer is a little more complex. It's not being very successful right now, and there's just a lot of barriers. So the things that we're creating in this in the Prime project are both trying to address those barriers, but also look at new policies that we think agencies could adopt that are consistent with, or at least not in conflict with WIOA, that allow them to expand their approach and their footprint in that post-exit space.
Great. Thanks, Tim. There are a lot of horror stories regarding answers provided by AI, as an example, using gasoline in recipes. Are you guys doing anything specifically to ensure that your AI portal is providing accurate, helpful information?
Yes. I think where you're seeing those horror stories typically come from open AI platforms and generative AI platforms, which are drawing data from anything you can find online. And as you know, not everything you can find on the internet is true. We actually use a closed system AI. So the only information the AI has access to is the information we provide it. So when we think about how we want to interact with people, the AI has received everything that I would train a entry-level student on in terms of how to talk to people, how to listen, how to ask reflective questions. What are the things you should be looking for in those questions and how to respond effectively? So the AI is really limited to what we think about as an entry-level kind of capacity support that, you know, really will only draw from that information. So it isn't going online saying, oh, well, I found on this random website that this is the way to talk to people is to be mean to them. That can't happen in this system because the AI really is set up around a very limited, in terms of the wealth of information out there, the information that we wanted to use in its responses back. And what the AI actually does, there's three components we don't talk about today so much because I know we're running low on time. But what the AI will do is it has metrics built in by the evaluation team that rate to what extent do the people that are participating with the AI, are they engaged in that system? So we know whether or not it's working on that level. It provides a risk assessment. So, for example, if the individual might be at risk. So earlier, I think the question of you know, my hours were cut, I'm not happy about it. Well, that's risk. I have a new manager, that's risk. And so recognizing that risk and doing something about it before that person loses their job is kind of that early warning system. But the other component, you know, back to anonymous attendee, is the idea that, you know, what's watching the AI? And so we actually have both a secondary AI agent that evaluates the first AI agent to make sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing and responding appropriately. The other thing is we do receive the full transcript, so we can actually go through and look at how is the AI doing, and not trusting an AI to evaluate itself or another AI to evaluate. We can go and look at what are the questions coming up, how is the AI responding, and that's where the evaluation team gets to come in and look at, you know, is this best practices? Is this what we would train that entry-level counselor, that rehabilitation staff to say in the same situation? And if it diverges from that, then we know there's an area to correct. We're hoping, and based on initial testing, it actually follows along a very similar pathway of what we'd expect from our common, you know, kind of interactions with individuals.
Great. Okay, I'm keeping an eye on the clock here. I'm just going to share, there's a anonymous attendee had reflected that as a prior VR counselor, a great comment there. So I think just directing folks to read that independently. A few more questions here, though, Tim. Do you know if there's a specific industry that has higher retention than others?
From past work, I can tell you what has lower food service. Fast food generally is low. High impact, high. There's an article I wrote a few years ago that I can't pull up now, but any career that has low support, high demands, and low control. So I don't get to decide how things are done, tends to have higher turnover. In the research we did, we didn't necessarily look at the industry. I think that's a great piece to look at as far as identifying, let's say, larger industries that individuals with disabilities are going into and evaluating those in terms of this retention. What is the likelihood of being retained in that? Not so much to say you should be going for this job versus that job, but more so that we have those conversations with consumers about, hey, just know that this is a tougher job over the long term, and how do we plan for it, and what are the issues that might be inherent in that?
Great, great. And related to that, too, do you happen to know what the difference is between retention, job retention, with kind of the general population and then the VR population?
You know, again, it typically is higher for the general population than just from a standpoint that we think about the barriers and discrimination and just work environment that individuals with disabilities experience. It's always higher in certain professions, but persons with disabilities unfortunately tend to outpace individuals in the general population in job loss over time.
Okay, two more questions in the Q&A and 2 minutes left. I know there are other questions in the chat, but we're probably not going to get to those. So question for Mark, do you ever work with tribal rehabilitation service programs in the sense of using research to help create employment opportunities?
All the time. Again, great relationships with the AIVR TAC. I've done a lot of work around the country with specific tribal VR programs. So reach out to us. We'd love to connect with you and work with you and share the information we're working on. But they're part of the VR system, and we want to make sure that they have all the opportunities for success that state VR agencies have.
And final question is a final question. Terry notes that I find that keeping in touch with my clients quarterly helps ward off problems before they quit work. I know VRCs are busy, but is this a value or promoting dependence by the client on the counselor?
I think it's valuable. I think, yeah, unfortunately, most state agencies will preclude those follow-up contacts just from the standpoint of utilizing services. When they do it, though, I think it's wonderful because most individuals spend 2 to 3 years getting to know their counselor, getting to learn how to work with that person, and to lose that important support in their lives, I think is very difficult, and I think it affects them in so many ways. So I'm all in favor of that, maintaining some type of connection. I actually think of the design of this project was to increase that level of connectivity. And I'm going to kick it over to Stacy so she can kick us out.
Thank you. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Kate. Thanks, Emily. Thanks to all of you who joined us. That concludes our November webinar. The link is in the chat for the evaluation. This has been recorded. It will be posted. An email will go out when it's available to watch afterward. You will also, if you aren't able to grab the link in the chat, you will get an email with the link to take the evaluation. Please take it, tell us how we did, and also get your CRC credit. So thank you so much for joining us, and that concludes our webinar.